Welcome to the Spurs News Podcast, your home for all things Tottenham Hotspur. Now, here are your hosts.
Hello, everybody, and welcome to a new episode of the Spurs News Podcast. I am Sam. Joining me to discuss the mad up and down roller coaster that is life as a Tottenham Hotspur fan, it's my current partner in crime, it's Stefan.
Hey, buddy, I'm back. How's it going?
Yeah, I'm good. The sun is shining despite the feeling that it would never once shine again on Sunday. I don't know about you, but I kind of feel like everybody tuning in, if anybody's tuning in, because I imagine a lot of people are just kind of like, nope, I want a break. Probably would appreciate us just going, do you know what, that happened, let's talk about something else. So I thought we'd pick like different topics. So
if you're on that theory, we're gonna have a very interesting few weeks. We're gonna be talking about a lot of stuff in the next 3 to 4 weeks.
We're gonna circle back to your negative ass in the end. Do you know what? You've ruined my joke to start the show, so I'm going to move on.
Sorry.
No, it's fine. Fuck you, and no one cares. No one will ever know now how funny I was about to be that you've just shat on. The world will remain angry at you for this and the Amazon thing. I've got a schedule, and I do a running order for every show.
You do, it's very organized.
I try and stick to it. I rarely do.
And every week I try and throw you on tangents.
So I've got open the show. There we go. Tick. And then we're going to go straight to the fan questions in the comments because that's going to make up a bulk thing. I've scheduled a North London Derby rant from me. And then underneath that it says fight Stefan. And then it's talk about Chelsea and Liverpool and then we close. So that's the running order and we're going to get it all in order. But we are going to start with everything from our social media.
Now it's time for your comments from our social media.
As always, Instagram or Facebook?
Instagram.
We beginneth on Instagrameth, the gram of our Lord. We have one comment from Instagram. I think most Instagram fans of the podcast are avoiding us still. Let's say it's fine. It only hurts me here and here. The Johnny Stark says, is VAR the worst thing to happen to the sport? Disallowing goals over the difference of a toenail, but not being used to review Partey pushing Romero during the header, or White interfering with Vicario? So, it's a VAR debate to kick us off.
Let's be honest, we can just answer that with yes. it is the worst thing. For multiple reasons. Like, I genuinely don't celebrate goals anymore unless they are so obvious. And even then, I'm kind of like, oh, wait, someone might have fallen over 30 seconds ago.
Yeah.
Are they going to find a reason? Like, instead of now celebrating what could be a great goal, my brain automatically goes to, have I just seen anything that could potentially be a foul in the build-up that's going to rule it out instead?
Yeah.
And if you can't celebrate the goals at a football game, what do you have left?
A lot of drinking, some violence.
Yeah, like you don't Saturday have the night, sport really. Anymore, though. Saturday
oh, night. Yeah. Sometimes there's football, too. VAR is an interesting thing because the concept of technology in football was always to improve the decision-making and to end a lot of debate. So it becomes matter of fact that we're going to review this on a video because rather than at halftime or full time, some ex-players going, look at the replay, the referees missed that. And everyone going, oh, bloody hell, the referee's the worst in the world. The idea was that the video system would look at it and therefore it would get changed in real time and you wouldn't have these debates anymore. However, what we have learned is technology isn't perfect, but is providing us with these matter-of-fact kind of opinions. But because it's still humans looking at it, who are still ultimately capable of getting things wrong or misinterpreting things, the decisions are still being debated hotly. So It hasn't eliminated the debate. If anything, I think it's made it worse. And my main reason why I think it's made it worse is because there was an element, there was an, always an element of acceptance that in real time, at the pace of a game, a referee's missed something, a linesman's made a mistake. Like, oh, that goal was offside, but Jesus, that strike was fair.
Oh, they missed that. Oh, damn. Yeah.
So there is ultimate frustration around that, but I never felt, I don't think I saw, and I don't think I ever felt a level of injustice that I now feel when I know that someone has reviewed this several times, slow motion, this angle, that angle, and then still come to the wrong conclusion. That's where you now have situations where whole football clubs are calling out the Premier League Referee Association. I know through various people that Tottenham and other clubs who aren't doing it publicly are on a regular basis contacting them to say, can you clarify this for us? Because, like,
how the hell did you miss that?
Well, not so much how did you miss that, but like, kind of, can you clarify? When Vicario was basically getting rugby tackled by every player because Man City scored that goal in the FA Cup, we put together a video package and sent it to the referees and said, we believe this is a foul. You're not giving it at all. No one in across four games. So can you clarify what our keeper can do? Because if our keeper runs through this guy, is he going to give away a penalty? See Onana the other day. If he does that, you know, can you clarify what is the rule? And got back, there's a couple of these, but it's largely down to interpretation on the day. These clips out of context don't tell the whole picture.
I love that as well. So how can, right, so interpretation on the day.
Yeah.
So that therefore means that all of the rules that a referee follows aren't actually rules. No, they're guidelines ready for their interpretation.
Yeah.
Which then makes a complete mockery of just the entire system altogether.
It does, and it's topical because look,
can you interpret someone not being offside even though they are past the last defender? But
No, we can't, because that is a matter of fact technology, like goal line technology is how that's portrayed. Offside is matter of fact like goal line tech. So that, park that over there. But decisions around like red cards and things and foul play and should this be overruled, should we review this and different things with VAR. Like, so for example, Here's a fun one that it goes towards referees and interpretation. And I'm a Tottenham fan saying this. The Battle of the Bridge at Stamford Bridge, we should have had five players sent off based on the challenges we put in that night. Genuinely should have. The referee said afterwards he was determined not to send anyone off because he wanted to watch us implode. His words, like, you can look this up. He was like, Tottenham season was imploding and I wasn't going to be blamed. I'm not sending anyone off. That, when you think about it, is bullshit for two reasons. One, a foul is a foul. A foul that is a yellow card is that. If a guy does it twice, that's two yellows and a red and he should be off. Now, I'm saying this as a Tottenham fan. Some of those challenges that went in that night could have actually injured Chelsea players. So if you're a Chelsea player and you hear a referee say that, where's your protection in that game? So what you're telling me, ref, is they can literally stomp on me. Thank you, Lamella. That was hilarious. and that's fine because you've made your mind up going into this. You are not going to send them off. So no matter what they do,
you are not going to be held responsible for it. Yeah.
Yeah. Now, the fact that a referee, a Premier League referee, came out and said that, so casually, so kind of like, I was just determined not, I went into the game knowing that Tottenham might implode and I wasn't going to be the one that they'd all blame, is such bullshit, but also paints the picture that, look, referees are human. I've seen a referee being interviewed, a former Premier League referee from many years ago, talking about Roy Keane, and he said I hated him. And it's an interesting thing that he sent him off three times. And I looked at it and I thought, well, there are times Roy Keane 100% should have seen a red card. There are other times where Roy Keane really, that's sending off possibly. And the three that he sent him off, they were no different than any other tackle on the pitch that day. But this referee hated him. He was always in my ear, always yapping. I hated him. So as soon as I had the chance to send him off, I would. I know people are human and it's human nature. But the fact that referees have that level and they can go into games like that is the reason why now with VAR and all the technology and all the stuff that they can review, this kind of level of... you feel cheated. You feel like there's... Yeah. Look at Nottingham Forest statement. We were worried that one of the referees in that VAR room was a Luton fan. So it made us nervous and we asked you to remove him to remove any doubts in our mind. We then have three penalty appeals that go to VAR moved away. Now, I don't agree with Nottingham Forest's statement. I don't like that. I think that should have been done privately. But they have a point because you are creating a situation where you feel like I'm being cheated here. How can someone look at this in slow motion from all these angles and then come to the conclusion that it's not a penalty when I'm looking at it, all these other people are looking at it, an ex-referee we've hired is looking at it and telling us, yeah, they're penalties.
Yeah, it would be like when we play Manchester City,
yeah,
the referee in the VAR room is a known Arsenal fan.
Yeah, yeah.
And then you can guarantee that depending on how the table looks at the time,
yeah,
you know, oh, Jack Grealish has gone down under a challenge from Romero in the box. VAR, yeah. Not a penalty. No, he definitely touched the ball.
Definitely not.
You know, and you wouldn't allow it. So I can kind of understand why they made a point of it, because human nature is you have a subconscious.
Now, I understand why they pointed out before privately and why they asked him to be removed. I would have thought that should have been remained. I think when you make that public,
should have remained private.
Football,
yeah.
One of my big things, like football fandom is an amazing thing and can be hilarious and great, but there's also a real nasty element. So every club's got a real nasty element. They basically enjoy the violence and the football's a sideshow. It doesn't take a lot to provoke that aspect of football fandom. So if you're a Nottingham Forest ultra, for want of a better word, and all of a sudden you believe your club's going to be relegated because of referees, that's when death threats start to come into it. That's when people start getting hunted down and like attacked in the street and stuff.
When it starts getting scary stuff, yeah.
Yeah, and that's why clubs and managers, that's why managers and stuff, when they slam the referees afterwards, get fined. It's not because sometimes the referees don't deserve it. The FA and the Premier League acknowledge that they've made mistakes. But you can't provoke tens of thousands of people, like the managers, like two managers fighting on the sidelines, they both get fined. Players fighting, they get fined. And the reason is because you are provoking thousands and thousands of people. Like, oh, they're fighting. Right, let's have a go. You know, it just doesn't... That's why that happens. And it's just incredibly frustrating to me because there needs to be a legitimate conversation from all the clubs to the Premier League officials to say, look, all VAR has done is highlight the standard of officiating is poor because you are constantly applying interpretation to what we are told are rules. So either you tell us that football is full of guidelines and the referees on the day can make their own frigging minds up, which is hell, or you say they're rules and you stick to them for the whole season. And any time...
And therefore, that's black and white. It is what it is.
It is. It is what it is. I mean, I've said ever since VAR first came in, I believe the referees that are on the field, the assistant referees, should have nothing to do with the VAR. VAR should be a completely separate thing, where they don't know each other, and make it even anonymous. They don't know each other. So they're in this box, they go in there, and they make the decisions based on what they are seeing, not like, oh, my mate's in the middle, he's going to VAR my game next, I don't want to overrule him because he'll overrule me and then we look like a tit.
Yep. And that's the problem. There seems to be like the friendshipy-like thing of, I don't want to overrule my mate on the pitch because it's going to make him look really stupid.
Yeah.
So therefore, I will keep watching this replay until I can kind of see what he sees. And then I'll go, Yeah, okay, fair enough. Yeah. I can understand.
I mean, I'm going to say this to caveat this a little bit before we move into the other questions, because we've got a lot and, you know, we'll run out of time. Tottenham were given a penalty via VAR at the weekend, and it was the most blatant penalty you'll ever see in your life, where Ben Davis is literally kicked in the nards, full pelt in the box. With the referee, and it was a brilliant picture, the referee stood watching it and flinching as it happens, because he's looking right at it, and then waves play on. So, to clarify, a referee on the field believed that there was nothing wrong with that. However, even though he's watching it and flinched, and VAR has to call him to the monitor, and once he's looked it on a little screen, even though he's just watched it in live motion, he gives the penalty. So what is the process there? And I think all of us as fans deserve to know what the thought process is. Are referees on the field, which is what Ange believes and is worried about, now no longer given decisions because they're worried about VAR overruling them? So they are basically just waiting for VAR, like the linesmen are. Don't put your flag up, wait for VAR. Yep. Or did he generally not think there was anything wrong with that? And then when the guy in the box said, yeah, there is, he went, oh, better give it then.
I can't remember if it was Sean Dyche or someone said, one of the managers said in the press conference, I'm sure it was Sean Dyche, and it was, as soon as the referee walks to the monitor, he might as well stop halfway and give the decision, because every person in their stadium knows, as soon as the ref walks to the monitor, he's giving the decision that's on the monitor. So he might as well be told, yep, go to the monitor, him go, okay, take three steps towards the monitor and go, okay, I'll give the penalty. You're just wasting everyone's time by going to the monitor, because the whole stadium knows if they've been called to the monitor, they're going to change the decision.
Yeah, I have seen it where it hasn't happened, though. I have seen the referee go over there. I've seen the referee walk over and go, no, I'm happy. I don't agree with you. Wow. I think I've seen it once, but I have seen it. Moving over to Facebook, we've got Alvin James Furr, who says, did we not look better in the first couple of months of the season? Play was more forward and flowing, more chances created and taken. And since other teams have sussed out our biggest weakness, defending corners, our team's now determined than ever to exploit that. I think there's several aspects of that to dive into. Did we look better the first couple of months of the season? Interestingly enough, and this is a fun thing, a perception thing is, yeah, of course we did. The first 10 games we were undefeated. We were playing good football, scoring freely, conceding as well, but we were scoring freely, and we were winning. We then had a terrible night against Chelsea, reduced to 9 men, two key players injured, hell evening, and after that, it has been a roller coaster, because it has been a case of, okay, who's fit this week? And then followed by, okay, who's in the country this week because of tournaments? Okay, who's fit and in the country? You? Oh, great. No, not you again, you know? And it's been kind of like a mix and match, whilst also trying to implement a whole new style of football and culture to the club, not just the first team. And it's interesting, because I think those opening 10 games, because of how well it seemed everyone just switched into it, what a lot of people now forget is it was a very settled 11. There was little to no change in those first 10 games from the 11 that started every game. And those players had all bought into it, had all clearly trained very well, all got the Ange system perfectly. Now, the reason they were probably getting picked over other players was because perhaps they hadn't quite grasped it, hadn't quite got it, or weren't capable of playing the way Ange wants to play. So when we had to start seeing mass changes, now the first example of that was Fulham, League Cup. He made a load of changes. It just, like, the machine fell apart. We lost that. Well, I mean, we lost in penalties, which again is crap, but we still lost. We went out of the League Cup early. But in the league, it was consistent. This team, all the time. And then the Chelsea game happened. And from that point, we went through the whole bulk of the season. So it's probably like, let's break the season down in like 10, 10, and 10. And now we've got the run in. The next 10 was a hodgepodge every week. And then the following 10 kind of started like that. And then it's gradually worked this way back to kind of a settled 11. But The players that managed to come through the middle 10 are all now knackered because they've not been rotated at all. Look at Udogi, who's now missing out on the Euros with Italy because he broke down in training with an injury. I mean, yeah, we've had some freak injuries as well. Like Udogi was like a non-contact injury and like season ending. Manus Solomon that happened to, Perisic happened to. And also keep in mind, Perisic started the season brilliantly, helping us off the bench. I think he had like three assists in two games before he picked up his injury. He was probably going to be a very key player coming off the bench this season for us.
I mean, if he had stayed fit, we probably wouldn't have signed Werner.
No, we wouldn't have.
Because Perisic was playing that role, and he was brilliant for the role, to be fair. It was such a shame he got injured.
It was. You know, he was doing... Yeah, and I think the player himself, in a really great interview recently, said that, you know, he was gutted because he felt when Ange came in, he sort of listened to everything he wanted him to do. He was like, oh, this is going to be great. Like, I can show the Tottenham fans what I'm about, whereas last season I was trying to play wing-back whilst I'm nearly 90 years old.
It was never going to work.
As a football manager fan, basically when someone's over 30, they've got a Zimmer frame in your mind. So when it comes to that, I think there's a perception there, and the perception thing's played out in the stats. Our finishing has become poorer, and I think that's something that everyone can see and look at. Like, we're not, our chance conversion rate has dropped, but the chance creation, the forward passes, the dominance of the ball has actually remained. So we're not actually doing statistically anything worse now than what we were doing in the opening 10 games. I've had a few times where I thought, oh, we don't look as effective as we did in those opening games. Have teams sussed us out? Have teams worked us out? I actually think it's less about that because everybody knows how Man City are going to play. Everybody knows how Arsenal are going to play. Everybody knows these teams, their setup, their style, their approach. Always going to play out from the back. They're always going to play in these ways. But they do it at a speed and an aggression and an ability that you can't set up. It's like you've got to just try and beat them. You know, you can try all these different things. You know how they're going to play. But it doesn't mean you've not sussed them out. You just know that's their style of play. So with Tottenham, we have that. But the difference, I think, is if you look at Man City's bench, Man City's bench starts for every other team in the league, pretty much. And like they'll play a game where Phil Foden is pulling all the strings and looks phenomenal. 60 minutes, they'll take him off and bring on Kevin De Bruyne. And you're looking at it and you're like, really? That's not good. And you see,
that's not fair.
And you see Jack Grealish start a game playing brilliantly, and then they'll substitute him for Doku, and you're like, that's not nice. And why do that to whoever they're playing?
That fullback's already shattered.
You look at the other teams, then other teams are trying to build towards that. Arsenal, through last season, realised they were missing something in the midfield. They then spent $100 million on Declan Rice, and they did a smattering of other smaller bits and pieces, just sort of, you know, with the squad. But they dropped $100 million on one player to try and take him that next step. And to a certain extent, it has, because if you look at this season, they are turning stuff they lost last season into draws and stuff they drew last season into wins. And they've managed to do that by making that recruitment. It largely now needs Tottenham to do a similar thing. Now, that's not drop $100 million on one player. We're not at that kind of phase of where to do that. But the squad needs to be more. It needs to have more depth to it of people who can play Ange's system. The fullbacks.
You need two starting 11s, you know. And at the moment, we've got one.
We've got one and a bit. Yeah, one and a bit.
Yeah.
And it needs to develop from there. And that is, you know, Ange's had two windows, and I think in both those windows, I've seen improvements to the squad. Without a shadow of a doubt, I've seen improvements. You know, Romero was injured last season. It was Sanchez or Dier stepping in. Now, if you think about Ange Ball for a moment, Dier or Sanchez stepping in for Ange Ball would just be, please don't.
Yeah.
To the point that knowing the way that Ange plays, even with Eric Dier on the books, he started Emerson Royale in central defence because he knew that Emerson would be able to play the higher line better than Dier could. That's not slagging Eric Dyer off. That's just the reality of this is the system, the way we're going to play. I need another defender who can do that. So we signed Dragusin, who was highly sought after, a very good defender, and he's come in, he's acclimatized into the club, he's played here and there. But Van de Ven and Romero are definitely going to be the starting centre backs, providing they're both fit. But they both know from training day in, day out, that Dragusin's right there. So if their levels drop, it isn't a surprise to me that since Dragusin's come in, Romero's level has been exceptional. Like his concentration, his leadership, even his everything about him has been on another level. And that's what having genuine competition does to a squad.
So he's realised that he's the centre back that was already there.
Yeah.
The manager has now brought in two centre backs.
Yeah.
So naturally, his place is one of the ones under scrutiny because, the defender that I brought in, so I need to keep proving to you every match.
He knows.
I deserve to be here.
It is a good thing for footballers to not feel comfortable with the shirt number. You need to go out and prove in training every single week why you deserve the start. And one of the trickiest things I think for any head coach or any coaching team is to keep that squad hungry and keep them all battling each other for the shirt, but also together as a group. So being able to do that, I mean, Pochettino did that for a couple of years for us and it worked really well. The squad was so close-knit, but also still pushing each other. We struggled, as we know, the club to add the players, and then it became just like such a settled team that it fell apart, basically. You need to keep adding. We've got to learn our lessons from the past. So to finish this off, the last thing about the corners, the comment around corners, here's an interesting stat for everybody. Just under, 35% of all the goals conceded by Ange Postecoglou's Celtic in his first season were from corners. It dropped. Mm-hmm. It dropped dramatically in season two. The way he always talks and the way he always talks about things is he does things in phases. So he's come in and it's all about this is how we play. This is our style. This is what we're going to drill. This is going to be our thing. And it's going to be like second nature to you that this is how we play. Once that is bedded in, it's then about refinement. It's about, okay, now we've got that bedded in and everyone knows this is how we play, we're now going to focus on, you know, this situation. And that would appear to be what he's done everywhere else, but obviously Celtic's the most recent example. But yeah, 35% of the goals they conceded in season one were from set pieces, corners, and then in season two it dropped down to like 10%.
Okay.
So there you go. It's whether that's going to happen here, who knows? We can be frustrated about it all we want, but that's just where we're at the moment. Michael Jasperana says, "Are we really that bad? Fifth in the league in a year we all knew was a major rebuild." Depends who you ask, Michael. If you ask me, no, we're not. I think we're one of the best footballing sides in the country this season. But expectations were raised at the start of the year by how well we started, and Tottenham fans, I believe, are genuinely angry over years of mismanagement, and therefore the minute things don't go well, people are screaming their heads off because the frustration from all the years comes out, rather than it being purely based on this being a fresh start and giving Ange the opportunity to build something. That's my opinion. What do you think, Steph?
I think reading the comments and things that you see on social media,
it seems
that the fans are back on the Enoch out quite a lot. Every time there's a bad performance, it goes down to, well, we'll never win anything under Enoch. And you're kind of like, they're trying to start again. Like, we have Ange in place now.
Yeah.
No matter what is said during this podcast, I am not in the camp of get Ange out of the club at all. I think Ange has said himself he needs 3 to 4 transfer windows. Yep. He's had 2. We have seen a massive progress in the form of the style, not the form, the style of football that we play.
Yep.
People are now going to White Hart Lane and enjoying the football, something we haven't had for a good few years.
Yep.
But if you go onto the comment segments of any online platform, you will read how incredibly good players are the worst player to ever play in a Tottenham shirt. You'll read how we are deluded to think that someone who can manage in Scotland could ever manage in the Premiership.
Yeah.
You'll read that the club don't care about Champions League; they just care about what concert's coming up in the summer.
Hey, just a question. You know, just a question for you. Yeah. Before we move on to the next one, I just want to highlight something. When you think about the best manager in the Premier League, which one comes to mind?
Pep.
Okay, go back. So not a current manager.
Oh, okay. Oh, Alex Ferguson.
What league did he manage in before going to Man United?
Dundee United in the Scottish divisions, yes.
No, it wasn't Dundee, it was Aberdeen.
You're not Dundee?
Aberdeen. I asked you was what league was he in. He had to try and be a smart ass, and you cocked it up.
Yeah, we'll edit that. Yeah.
No, we won't. Moving on. Tom Perk says, which has been your favourite and least favourite game of the season? Mine would have to be Villa in the Premier League was my favourite. My least favourite was Fulham in the League Cup. My favourite was probably the Villa game as well, for lots of reasons. My least favourite was probably the North London Derby that we've just had. My least favourite was the Chelsea game at home. Losing to that lemon nonce bastard really upset me. More than the North London Derby. Steph?
That Chelsea loss is by far my least favourite of the season. Not just for the result on the day, but what kind of followed. The injuries, the suspensions, everything. That was just a bad, bad day at the office.
Yeah.
My favourite game of the season? I'm not sure on that one, actually.
See, it's funny, isn't it? It just shows human nature. You could think of the negative straight away.
For me personally, it would probably be the Bournemouth match, because that's the game I've been to this season.
Okay.
And there was the goodbye to Hugo at half-time and stuff. So.
Okay. Yeah. Barry Fowles. Barry says, the overreaction of the fan base to this game is saddening. This is a rebuilding season. Arteta, 8th in his first 2 seasons. Klopp, 8th. Pep won nothing in his first. Why do you think our fan base is so fickle, impatient and deluded? Did they really think we'd be challenging this year? Now, this is a fun one.
I genuinely believe if those first 10 games of the season leading up to the Chelsea game had had a couple more draws in there and a couple more, you can see what he's trying to do. It looks like this is going to be really good. Then we'd be here now in 5th place going, bloody hell, we're actually challenging the Champions League. The problem was we had those 10 amazing games at the beginning where, you know, even us on the podcast were joking, it's not going to happen. Could it?
Maybe.
We were joking around with it, but I think some fans have taken that as we're going to win the bloody league this
season.
I was about
to say, I think there's a danger when people with social media and stuff make something as a joke that others take seriously. And after those 10 games, a lot of us, a lot of Twitter, big accounts, a lot of everyone were doing this. We couldn't, could we? And it was a running joke. It was a joke. Like, there was no one actually, I mean, we could. No, it was a joke. I mean, we could have, but it was a joke, but we might have. So it was a silly thing that we were doing. And
it was everywhere as well. Like, so many people were making the joke.
It's possible people bought into that. But the fickle thing here, which is something me and you get stuck into quite a lot, because you actually hold your hands up and say that you can be that yourself.
I can be a flip-flop. I can definitely be a flip-flop. Yep.
And so that for me, this kind of... because people have really short memories as well, which is aggravating. Now, I don't like talking about Pochettino at all on this podcast anymore. I have a very set opinion on the person because he went to Chelsea. He basically just shat on his legacy for me. He needed a job, all that stuff. And I can understand it. But there's two clubs he could have avoided, and I'd have still backed him, and I'd have loved to have seen him do well anywhere else. So
he could have gone to United, and we would have been
he could have gone to United, and it would have been like, ugh, yeah. But yeah, good luck on your way, sort of thing. But no, you went to Chelsea, and he started calling them the biggest team in England and all that shit. And yeah, straight away, knowing everything that he knows, yeah, he's dead to me. When he was, you cannot doubt, though, that in the Premier League era, he got us playing the best football, and we actually challenged for the major honours. We challenged for the Premier League, and we challenged for the Champions League under him. So we have to say that what he did in his tenure for us was fantastic. It made us all believe. What also is kind of forgotten now is in his first season, he was up for the sack, and the fans were on him a lot.
Yeah.
And if it wasn't for a deflected free kick from Harry Kane, the rumours are, very strong rumours, he'd have been sacked the next day. Now, the fans did that because fan pressure is what forces the hand of boards. You know, a board will sit back, appoint someone, and they will give them time. I mean, obviously, if you're fighting relegation, they're not going to give you, they're going to have to panic. But we were sort of mid-table-ish. There was no danger of relegation, and you could see, anyone with eyes could see that this squad was transforming and the style of play was transforming. And you could all see what the plan was, you could all see what was going forward, and you just knew that once the mercenaries that were at the club were gone and you had players that were all buying into it, which happened over that season, he gradually shifted the crap, shifted the players who were just picking out their wages and didn't care, brought through academy players who were going to run themselves into the ground for the cause. And you got to this position where it was like, okay, we're actually, yeah, we're going in the right direction. But he people were on him non-stop. Oh, bloody hell, recruited a manager from Southampton. What do you expect? Bloody small time, this, that, the other. You know, if he'd been in Scotland, if he'd managed in Scotland to come down to us, oh, it would have been Scotland. So it's the same damn thing. It is literally the same damn thing again. Where anyone with eyes and anyone who's willing to take a step back from the emotion of a defeat can go, oof, that was crap, but I can see the direction we're going in. I can see the style of football is being implemented, and it's all good. Everything that we're doing is in going in the right direction. A great thing that you can do is there are some football fans from other clubs who are not what's the right word? They are people who will look at things and be objective, even though they are diehard fans of other teams. There's a Crystal Palace fan, and he runs a social media account, Crystal Palace, and he talks about other teams a lot, and he talks about Tottenham. And he said he looks at what Ange's done, and he from an outside point of view, he's just like, they are going to be a threat now. I got friends who are Man City fans, Man United fans, and they're looking at the way we're playing, and they're saying, yeah, Tottenham are going to be back. You can see it. Like, you can really see the football. You can really see the way the team's moving forward now. All he need, you know, everything's different. I got one of my best friends in the world is a Gooner, and trust me, it hurts me to say that. And and she said to me, she said, when Arteta came in and started doing this, she said, the reason why Arsenal fans were so anti him in season one is we couldn't see any sign of what was coming. In season two, you could. She said, but in season one, you couldn't. She said, with Tottenham, you're already seeing it. Like, you can really see, like, people have bought into it straight away. She said, it's frightening. Because it was like, we were on the way back up and you were on the way back down. And I like that. She said, and now it's turning around. Like, now you're coming back. She said, I don't like that. I don't like that at all. So outside perspective, everyone else looking at us can see we're heading in the right direction rapidly. Look at the fucking league table. We're fifth. We're not 15th. We're not 10th even. We're fifth. And yeah,
we're fifth, and we are within touching distance of fourth.
Yeah, and look, it's not a case of, we should be happy with fifth. No one under Ange is happy with fifth place. But it's about this season's about rebuilding. Everyone was like, oh, we need to have a rebuild. We need to do this. We need to do that. We also lost the world's best striker in the summer. Oh, my God, we're not scoring enough goals. Hello? We had a guy who would score 20-plus for fun. And in this system, I genuinely believe this year's Golden Boot would be Harry Kane and others, because I think he would have racked them up.
And I've got to be honest, like, there's all this stuff in the paper at the moment. Like, Harry Kane's just scored his 42nd goal of the season for some part-time German league team or something. I genuinely believe if he was in our squad still, he would still have hit that sort of number.
It would have been interesting.
Like, the way the wingers were playing with Madison and all that there, and the way that we play in Ainsball, I genuinely believe he would have blown the likes of the Haaland and Cole Palmer's on 21 goals a season.
Well,
he would have blown them out the water this season.
In a discussion regarding Kulusevski, we mentioned over 50-something key passes to players who then missed opportunities. If those 50-something key passes, let's drop them down to 25 went to Harry Kane. And let's say Harry...
He's scoring 20 of them.
Yeah, I was about to say. With the ratio that he has, you'd imagine that's 20 additional goals this season.
Purely from one player.
And 20 assists from Kulusevski. What a difference.
Yeah, that's just one player. That's not including Werner, Son, Johnson,
and that is in addition to, because those are key passes that have not been converted. So these are passes that are being made. I was looking through the stat, and there is loads of them. There's just loads. Our finishing has just diminished. I don't know what's happened. But when it comes to the creating of chances and everything, they're there. They're still happening. Anyone who wants to really drive this point home to yourself, check out a few Arsenal reactions to that North London derby win, which is basically on the lines of, we were fucking lucky. And you know, obviously you've got the passionate Arsenal fans who were just like, yeah, we dominated them, which is a lie. The ones that are kind of a bit more step back are like, whew, that, how did we do that? And that's the reality.
Yeah.
Every stat, everything from that game shows Tottenham's total dominance of the game. But anyway, right, that's a different thing.
It was unfortunately just the finishing, but we'll get on to the North London derby in a bit.
Ian, how would you say this? R-I-A-C-H. React? Ian React? R-I-A-C-H.
Reach?
Ian, let me know. Let me know how badly I'm doing this. Sorry. We need Sonny to go back on the wing, as he is not a central striker. He's our top goal scorer for the season so far, and most of them have come as a central striker, but I think it's fair to say his best position for us is off of the main guy. We've not had a main guy. Richie is that, but Richie wasn't fit enough to start the North London derby, so... We just got.
I don't think it's a coincidence that we played our best football with a striker and Sonny out on the wing, getting the ball and running at people and stuff. I don't think it's a coincidence that was our best football.
No.
But once Richie's back fully fit, hopefully we'll see it again.
So Ryan Miller says, as you boys have the depressing job of talking about Sunday's game, I have two questions for you. One, do you think Madison's poor form should see him dropped for the next game and Deki play the number 10 role? For me, yes.
Yep.
Okay. Also, your comments a couple of weeks ago regarding zonal marking is stuck with me. At the game, I was watching us prepare to defend a corner and we were zonal marking. Zones were all covered, just the players were... none of the players were. Arsenal scored from the corner. What are your views on zonal marking? What is the benefit of it? And I just don't see the point in it.
There is no good points to zonal marking. I don't understand why it's done.
So
because no one scored from my zone. No, but the guy that ran out of your zone scored. But didn't score it in my zone.
Yeah. There are so many aspects to this. Zonal marking from set pieces isn't a new thing. It's also something that's done by a lot of the top clubs. And the reason why is you train the players to guard your zone. So anyone who comes into your zone, it doesn't really matter because you're trying to win the ball. So if you're a defender and the ball's coming into your zone, it is your job to get there first and clear the frigging thing. That is your job. So if you do that, it doesn't matter where someone's coming from. It doesn't matter where anything else is going on or whatever runs, because the ball's coming to your zone and you clear it. Ange makes a very valid point around this, and it is true. That if a team scores from two corners, but you've defended 15, does that mean you have a problem defending corners? you look at it as a fan and go, we've conceded two goals from corners, for fuck's sake, that's awful. Well, if you have a problem defending corners, then you should concede 15, shouldn't you? Do you see what I'm saying? It's like saying, oh man, they scored from penalty. Our goalkeeper shit at saving from penalties. It's like, well, that's not quite how that works.
Most goalkeepers are,
Yeah, it's not quite how that works. But there's also other elements to this, and there's a lot of stuff going on. Now, there's a lot of very good video analysis from the game, which shows Ben White literally unzipping Vicario's goalkeeping gloves. There's another video of him standing on his foot, basically getting his face. There's a lot of stuff going on, shenanigans. For Kai Havertz' goal, he literally pushes Van de Ven two-hand shove in the back, which VAR reviewed and cleared. This was a couple of days after Chelsea had a goal ruled out for their striker pushing someone else in the back. So again, we come back to this consistency and this, are they rules or are they guidelines? Because if that is a rule and you have, and as a set of officials, the Premier League officials have gone, okay, no, that's, you can't give that goal. Look, he shoved him. Then how is that okay the following day or 2 days? It doesn't make sense. I personally think I'm of a school of football where you've got to be stronger there. You've got to deal with it. Also, I'm from a rugby background, and we have a saying in rugby, which I want to apply to this, which is you take the referee out of the game. Now, rugby, there's a lot of interpretation in rugby, because the scrum and things like that is very, to someone who doesn't have a clue what's going on, like a lot of referees used to play in the back, so they don't know. They just give decisions based on what they think, like, oh, that collapsed, I'll give the penalty that way. So you have to take the referee out of the game. If you think the referee's interpreting things wrong, they're seeing things or missing things, you have to take them out. And not as in like someone smashed them into Rose Ed, by the way. That's not what I mean. Romero, chill.
No, take them out and don't let them have a chance to make those decisions.
So Van der Ven gets that push in the back, but be stronger. You're a freaking unit, man. Don't let little Kai Havertz have that on you. Get to that ball first. Or someone else get to that ball first. Also, it's not lost on me that our corner issues have happened largely since Richie's been missing. Richie defended the front post. Richie's role was the Harry Kane role, which was from defensive set pieces, and 9 times out of 10, Richie dealt with it. And you go back and watch it, and he did. So you have systems. And you have systems and things in place. If a guy's out injured, should you change the system and change everything you're doing, everything you're working towards? Probably not. You need others to step up. And right now, we go back to this same thing, which is in the squad, we don't have that. You need, if Richie's injured, we need another guy who can play the Richie role. We don't have it in the squad. That's defensively and offensively.
Yeah, we don't have another hold-up striker who's going to play players in, and we don't have a defensive in the air tall unit to sit on that front stick and just head the balls away.
No, which is
don't let Hoybier do it, for Christ's sake.
Yeah, that was a cracking goal, mate. You won't see a better finish than that in the Premier League this season. He glanced that header. I tell you what, for all the shit I give him, how friggin' unlucky was that? All joking aside, 9 times out of 10, that goes out for another corner off the bulk of his head. On this occasion, he friggin' glances it like the best striker in the world straight past the keeper. I mean, he had a look on his face of like, I couldn't do that again a million times if I tried. Like, there was just no way I could ever. Like, if we go up the other end and I have this exact same scenario, there's no way I score that goal. So for all the crap I give him, look, that is just friggin' unlucky. That's just what it is. That happens in a game. I saw a game where Harry Kane scored an own goal and just had a look on his face like, shit, wrong end. The final question then goes to Mark Corder. Mark says, Spurs is a business, 10 out of 10. Spurs is a football club, ? 10 out of 10. Now this, Mark, and I said this to you in the comments, is a big question. Like, this is a kind of whole podcast, we could talk about it. We don't really have the time, so what I'm going to do is I'm going to keep this question to one side, and the next time we have a show where it's like not really got a game to talk about, or perhaps we won the game really easy and we've got kind of like, okay, that was easy. That
what
was
happened?
Fun.
We won 4-0. We dominated them, and that was it.
Yeah, that was it. I'm going to circle back to this for a discussion, friend. But what I want to do is just give you a rating. Spurs is a football club. So as a business and everything that has been done, you're 10 out of 10. Yeah, I mean, we're 9 or 10 out of 10 for that probably, because football clubs typically grow because of on-field success, but we've done it without that, which is maddening. Like, maddening.
Good and annoying. Yeah.
But yeah, so it's like you've got to give them the absolute props of, like, how have you done that? Like, how have you built our brand based on, ooh, nearly.
Let's be honest, the Etihad and the Emirates don't have Beyonce and a go-karting track. You know what I mean? Like,
yeah, Beyonce and a go-karting track. It sounds like a really crap indie band. they're in the Live Lounge next week. So,
yeah.
Out of 10, what do you think as a football club, or football side of things?
Probably, wait a minute, if you class all the history and everything as a football club since day dot, you've got to say we're at 7, surely, at least.
How about, I think I could speak for Mark, how about under Enoch? So we are, because if we're doing it over all time, as a business, we ain't 10 out of 10. we've already gone out of existence a lot. So we're going to do it as the Enoch era, Daniel Levy era of Tottenham Hotspur, as him is our gallant custodian.
6 out of 10?
Well, you're very nice. I gave it a 5 in my head. I was a 5.
fairly average, I think, is what we can basically say.
I think the main reason why it's not lower for me, and I will say this, the main reason why it's not lower, because we picked up a couple of trophies and we are a consistent Premier League team. It's very easy for us to forget, as fans of a Premier League club that have always been a Premier League club, there are 60 to 80 clubs lower than us in lower divisions who would kill to have the problems we have. And I always have to remind myself of that. Like, when I'm like, really, we're the worst team in the world. Actually, no, we're not. We're really not. And there are clubs and who have been there and have tried it, and like their fans are currently watched them in the Premier League and are currently watching them League Two. And I think to myself, okay, yeah, we're frustrated because we're not winning trophies. Things could be a lot worse. Like, so
I just looked it up. There are 50 teams. Since the Premier League started, there have only been 50 teams to make it into the Premier League.
Yeah, and
we are one of the teams that have never been out of it. So there are definitely clubs that have had it a lot worse than us.
Yeah, so if on a footman side, I'm going to go 5 out of 10 because there's a lot that could be improved. But then there's a lot that could, you know, there's a lot that could be a lot worse. So I think right in the middle. That's where I'm at with it. So the next thing on my agenda is my North London derby rant.
Okay.
Everyone take a seat. Oh, let me just crack my neck a little bit. There we go. Okay. One of the things from running Spurs News Facebook page, which has always amused me, is that when I post the match updates, and it is typically me that does it, if I write kickoff, here we go, come on you Spurs, I might get a couple of comments, maybe a few likes. And it'd be like, come on, Tottenham, come on, and that's it. If I post Tottenham have scored, it'd get maybe 100 likes. Maybe if it was a great goal and people really want to talk about it, you get like 300 likes. And the comments typically are anywhere between 10 and 20. And genuinely, go back and look this up and you'll see it. The minute I post goal conceded, you've got hundreds of reactions and hundreds of comments. It is like people enjoy being miserable more than they enjoy being happy. Like, no one is motivated to jump into the kind of, we scored, how great is this? Let's talk about the goal. But everyone is motivated to jump into, bloody hell, and have a good moan. Is that a British thing? Like, is that just the most stereotypical British thing in the world? I don't know. Is it a social media thing? I don't know.
I used to work in retail, and on the door, as you left the staff area into the retail area, we had a sign. And on the sign, it was, give a customer a good experience, they'll tell 3 friends. Yep. Give a customer a bad experience, they'll tell Facebook.
Yeah, I worked in a brothel, that sign.
Yeah. But it's like, it's such a true thing. Something good happens, you might tell one or two people you speak to. Yeah. Something bad happens, boom, yeah, you're straight on social media. And it's the same with football fans. Like, we've scored a goal. Yeah. Okay. We conceded a goal. I must tell everyone how shit it is.
Yeah. Yeah. And it is, like, it is kind of crazy. It is kind of crazy. So the North London Derby kind of encapsulated this, because I'm watching the game and I'm watching it from start to finish and I'm watching us dominate. Like, genuinely, I am. And I'm watching us play good football. Now, an own goal gives them the lead. An own goal can happen at any point, right? This is just one of those freak things in football. We then go very close with a header. Sorry, we go very close with a header first. They score from an own goal. We then hit the post from a header. And I'm looking at it, and I go, this sums football up about fine margins. Like, that ball hits Højbjerg on his head an inch to the right. It goes out. He clears it, right? Literally, it's just a fraction means it's come off at an angle and flew past Vicario. At the other end, if that ball was an inch to the left, it goes in. And then the one that hits the post. And rather than being 1-0 down, we're actually 2-0 up after however many minutes. Or 1-0 up after however many minutes. Van de Ven's goal. Van de Ven... It's a great finish, by the way.
Oh, isn't it just?
Now, here's
a striker's finish.
Right, shut up, I'm running, right? So Van de Ven, he scores a goal, and it's ruled out for offside. Offside should be an arbitrary thing. Here's the line of offside. Yeah, we're taking it off this guy's left butt cheek, and yeah, it would appear that a hair on his right ass cheek is just slightly over the line, so that's offside. That is how they've interpreted it ever since they brought VAR in. It's a matter of fact thing. They draw the line and that's it. Okay, fine.
Yep.
I'm aggravated by that because I don't think that's fair. And I'd say that for all clubs and all situations. Like, oh, come on, we want goals. This is a nonsense. This isn't why offside rule exists. But okay, fine, right? That's what it is. So if they've drawn the line, then he's offside, he's offside. What aggravates me about that is there is now an interpretation. Do you remember that if the ball came off an opposition player, you couldn't be offside? Do you remember that?
Correct.
They changed that rule. And, okay, whether it's a good change or not, it's a matter of interpretation, but the rule is now open to interpretation. So if it came off an opposition player, you were onside. Everyone understood that. Even if it deflects off them, you understood it. Look at the Man City goal that got ruled out and stuff like that. Everything we understood. Now it's interpretation, because you have to interpret whether the guy was trying to play the ball. So if the defender tries to pass the ball, tries to do something and it comes off him, even if he skews it or if he does a pass back and you're stood there and you take the ball, then you're onside. The ball bounces off one Arsenal player and then Tomiyasu tries to clear it, hooks it, and it slices straight into Van de Ven's path and he scores. So explain to me how he isn't onside.
Oh, honestly, I can't. I have watched the replays multiple times and I'm like, I don't get it. Like,
okay,
that is the definition of trying to play the ball and being onside.
So here it is. On-field interpretation is that isn't a deliberate attempt to play the ball. It's a deflection. VAR will not then look at it when they're doing the offside thing, because on the field, the referee says, no, that's not deliberate. Please tell me where the clear and obvious error fixing is in that scenario. If you are reviewing the goal anyway for offside, surely when you're drawing all your friggin' lines, one of the things you should be checking is, okay, well, if that came off an Arsenal player's trying to play the ball, then it doesn't matter where the friggin' line is. So let's look at that first.
Yeah,
but no, because on-field referee says, no, that's not a deliberate attempt to play the ball. It's interpretation. A rule that existed, which was black and white, like that goal would have stood 2 years ago, I think it was, when it was changed.
Yeah.
Now, doesn't, because the on-field referee looked at it or didn't look at it, and so VAR didn't look at that at all. They just drew a line. Because if they'd looked at it, they'd have gone, oh, or maybe they would have. We don't know. But they could have possibly looked at it and gone, yeah, he's trying to clear that. So
wait, he swings a leg at it, the ball hits it and goes off at an angle.
Yeah.
Where's that not a deliberate trying to play the ball?
What else are you trying to do? And I know this just sounds like real sour grapes, and I know this is how it sounds. But I'm just talking my way through this game because what I want to talk about is the fine margins. So we're 2-0 up when that happens in this scenario in my head of fine margins. We're now 3-0 up. Now, all of the fans that are currently going ballistic about how crap we were, which isn't the reality, but because of the scoreline is the thing that they now believe, nothing has changed in the way this game has gone other than that tiny, tiny little margins on each thing. Højbjerg clears the ball, doesn't glance into his net. Romero scores with his headers. Van de Ven isn't given offside, which when you look at everything I've just said, it's not big leaps. Those aren't like, oh yeah, but there's no, I'm talking about the tiniest margin being different.
You're not talking about if so-and-so had run through on goal and
yeah,
not
exactly,
you know,
got which
shot.
Is,
you're
which
talking
is,
about things yeah. that actually happened on yeah. the pitch that could have, yeah.
Yeah, they're just literally, and they are the tiniest, tiniest things. So we lost that, we were 3-0 down at half-time, and I'm sat there and I'm looking at it. Of course I'm annoyed, of course I'm frustrated, but I'm just looking at it, I'm like, I don't understand how that's happened. Like, I don't, like, it is literally the tiniest of margins. Havertz's goal, right? If you exclude yep. the fact he literally pushes Van de Ven, and you exclude the yep. fact that a few days ago that was a foul and now it's not. Okay, so let's say yep. halftime is 3-1 of us. Let's say it's 2-1 to us. Let's say it's 1-0 even. The game's completely different and the perception is completely different. No one's yeah. going, oh my God, we can't defend corners. Everyone's looking at that going, oh, bloody hell, that was unlucky.
That's a foul.
That was, yeah. yeah, that's ridiculous. But again, tiniest of margins. The referee does give that. Like it was the referee from a couple of days ago. He sees it, goes, no, that's a foul. You've got both hands in his back. You know, VAR yeah. looks at it and goes, oh, we got to give that. You know, the other day, that's not right. That's 3-0, 3-1. Whatever the scenario is, these tiny little margins were the difference makers. And to say that we were awful, and all the comments and all the stuff about our crap, Ange out, he can't do it, he's so unadaptable. We played them off the park. In the second half, their goalkeeper made an error. And all I saw was, oh, we were gifted that. You're right, we were. But we pressed him the entire game, forcing that to happen. It was our press, our relentless running of Sonny, who didn't have a good game, but his relentless running caused these problems. And he did give it to
us. We're not even
going to
ask why Romero was playing a centre forward. We're just going to go with time, right place.
QT Romero can do whatever the fuck he likes, right? QT Romero's position is footballer.
Yeah.
So in games, QT will get bored and he will go up front and he'll do. Yeah, I'm all for it, right?
Because every now and again he does a cootie. Yeah.
Because by the way, both Van de Ven and him took their chances were incredible. Like that's our centre backs right there scoring
Unfortunately,
goals. Like
finishing better than our forwards.
Exactly by some margin, by the way. But cootie scores that goal and you're looking at it. But again, look at our post. No one's like, yeah, come on, guys, we can get back in this. Maybe one or two people are. But it's just like, oh, this is so shit. We were gifted that. The only goal we can get to gift. We then get a penalty. Oh, bloody hell. You know, so they gifted us a goal and a penalty. Just the scoreline flattered us in the end. What fucking planet are you on? The scoreline flattered Arsenal. I'm sorry, but that's the reality. There's no way. Like, I'm just going to say this now. This isn't sour grapes. They deserve to win that game because they were street smart and they got the decisions and they won the game. I'm not taking anything away from that. They take the 3 points that they needed.
They set themselves up to play in a certain way and it worked.
They took the 3 points and went. All I'm trying to point out is the tiny margins involved. Saka's goal came right off the back of a penalty being waved away for us. I've seen those given all the time. Kulusevski literally comes in the box and a guy runs across the back of his legs and clips him. Kulusevski tries to stay on his feet. That isn't a dive. You can watch it. There's no way as there is contact. Now, anywhere else on the pitch, that gets given. And to demonstrate that, it happened twice more in the game and it was given.
Don't want to sound like I'm saying any other referee, this referee was shit.
No.
But a different referee gives that as a penalty.
Oh, massively, yeah. And VAR doesn't overrule
it. We see it every week.
VAR looks at it and goes, yeah, there's contact there. Yeah, crack on. Yeah, you're good. But VAR aren't going to overrule him on that because that's not how that works, is it? They look at that and go, oh, no, the referee. There's not a lot of contact there. So, we're not going to overrule him for that. But the reality is, he got into the box, the guy ran across the back of his legs, took his legs out. Now, if he didn't do that, could there have been a goal scored after? Possibly. But we won't ever know. Now, they literally broke from that and scored. So again, there's these tiny, tiny margins between success and failure. That is the difference in this game. And you go into the second half, and in essence, we won the second half 2-0. We were pretty comfortable. I think Arsenal had one shot. They had four shots in the entire game and scored three goals. Well, scored two. We added one for them. But that's the level of dominance we had. Arsenal had their lowest shots of, like, the season against us. We dominated the game. We completely dominated, but our finishing is awful right now. Our forward play, our kind of into their opposition box, we are lacking something right now, and all of us can see it.
I don't understand how it's just fallen off so badly.
It's form. Form is a fickle thing, and confidence then when you're... Like, Maddison is clearly still fighting back from his injury. It was his biggest injury of his career. It's happened when he was at Newcastle, and he was flying before that injury. And now he looks like a guy who's playing within himself a bit. He looks like a guy who's trying, okay, I need to get back. Let's try and do a few simple things. Let's try and do this. Sonny looks like that. Sonny's like, okay, just pass the ball. Keep it simple. Don't try as much because right now you're not feeling, you haven't got your touch right or whatever. It looks like a group of players who are feeling that way and they're not quite on it. It's going to take Maddison to arrive in the box late and thunder one in for him to go, okay, all right.
That's how I do it.
It's just going to... Something will ignite. It will. Whatever it is, and whether it happens by the end of the season, I don't know. But these are all very good football players that people are now slagging off. Yeah, some of them. Okay, rotate them out for a bit. Like, I wouldn't object to Sonny and Maddison starting Chelsea from the bench. I would literally start Deki and Richie ahead of them because both of them are struggling for form.
At the moment, yeah.
Both of them are struggling for form, but that's fine. That happens to the best player in the world. Erling Haaland's undoubtedly one of the best strikers on the planet, and he's had a really weird run of form, so he was sat on the bench.
Yeah.
That's what happens. It just happens. So that's my North London derby rant. That's it out of the way. I'm fed up with the kind of throw the baby out with the bathwater kind of approach, just this nonsense. The minute things don't go our way, like, actually watch the game. There's so many people who are diving into this, and I guarantee they've not watched it. Because if you watched it, there's no way you could come away with that kind of interpretation that everyone is awful, we are awful, everything's terrible. That's just, it's impossible to see that. You must be Stevie Wonder. It doesn't make sense to me. So that's my rant wrapped up. The next thing on my agenda is to fight you.
Okay.
Now, the reason for this is because you actually did this to me.
Uh-oh.
We had this kind of conversation by a message, and you basically have said that you think Ange's got a problem because you think we're going to lose to Chelsea, lose to Liverpool, and you think that's Ange, that's a problem for Ange.
Okay, right, we're caveat that with some context.
Yeah.
A bit more context. I did not say I think Ange should be sacked. I did not say, I said with how toxic the fan base and how quickly the fan base can turn. Yeah. I personally, the way we are playing at the moment and the finishing ability we seem to be showing at the moment, unless the ball falls to Romero or Van de Ven in the box, I think against Chelsea, Liverpool and Man City, we are going to struggle.
Yeah.
Not because of anything other than the fact of our finishing and those in quotations, the star players aren't performing as we hope they would at the moment. Yeah. And I think if we were to lose to Chelsea on Thursday and then to Liverpool and City on the back of a loss of a North London derby, on the back of that 4-0 defeat to Newcastle, that fan base has the potential to turn horrible.
Okay.
Like, really toxic. You're thinking, that's a potential 5 losses in a row.
We're not playing Man City after Liverpool, though. We play Burnley.
We play Burnley, then Man City, yeah. But even so, that's... We should beat Burnley, but then they're also a club that that is a club that are fighting tooth and nail against relegation.
Well,
if they're still in a relegation battle, it's going to be a tough game. And if our players, if the players don't start performing how we know they can,
yeah,
knowing what the fan base can be like, yeah, I can see the end of the season. End of the season, there being a big Ange out crowd, which I won't agree with.
So what is it you're actually saying? So you're actually, what your point of view is, if we lose these games, people are going to be mad and going to be wanting Ange out.
Yeah,
but you're saying to me, like the conversation we've had, you feel like we're going to lose these games.
I don't see us beating Liverpool or Man City.
Okay.
Chelsea very much depends on what Chelsea turns up on the day. The same as what Spurs turns up on the day, you know? If we turn up second half first Aston Villa,
yeah,
then happy days. If we turn up first half first Aston Villa, then we're in trouble.
Okay.
You know, our form is so, like, the form is so up and down at the moment. And, yeah, I am very much hoping of the last games of the season we have, yeah, there is only one game I want us to lose.
Yeah, okay, well, that's a whole other conversation. I'm not, yeah. What annoys me, and this isn't a massive dig at you, even though it is the pessimistic bollocks that I have to face on a regular basis. Running the Facebook page, everything is fucking exhausting. I get, like, if you lose a game, I get the kind of initial, I get that. That's kind of like, so I always kind of like brush past that, because I do that, we all do that. But it's like, when I'm sat down and I'm reading through comments, and like, I'm in our chat now, you and Dan, for example, the other day, Polynesian Dan.
Hey, Dan.
We're basically working, yeah. I mean, Dan has said season over following the Arsenal result. For all the long-term fans, it has now been said.
Yeah.
What? Yep. We're going to lose there. Why? You've just said, like, yourself, in the best case scenario, our form's up and down. We and you have just walked through the North London Derby, which I watched from start to finish. You've seen, we were the better side. It was just tiny margins. There's no reason to think that we can't beat Chelsea. There's no reason to think we can't beat Liverpool. There's no reason to think we can't beat Brighton. Of course, it's fucking football. Anyone can beat anyone on a day.
Oh, anyone can beat anyone. Yeah.
So why do we have to be, like, it's like you're pessimistic as hell and you suffer twice. I went into the North London Derby like, oh, I hate these games, but I'm hoping we're going to win. I didn't go into it like, oh, well, we've lost. I mean, what is the point of living if you're just going to be negative all the fucking time? And it is exhausting, man. It is exhausting to face that constantly. And people can say, yeah.
I read the comments on the Facebook page. My God. Yeah.
And it's like, I know people can say, oh, yeah, but like, no football team has the God-given right to win every single game. And even Man City don't do that. And they're the most dominant side that have been in the Premier League since the Man United era and Arsenal and Chelsea and the different eras we've had.
Yep.
But they are dominating the league, but they're not winning every game. And they're not walking every game, even though idiots like online like to say they are. They're not. I watch the frigging games. It doesn't happen. They have to work frigging hard.
Nottingham Forest 2-0, and even that, they were lucky.
They had to work. Yeah, they had to work their asses off to get that result. Like, and you look at the table. Well, every Tottenham fan would be moaning about that result. Every Tottenham fan, every Man City fan knows that that's what you have to do to win things. So every Man City fan, that's a great result. That. I listen to Gary Neville do a podcast. Gary Neville does my head in a lot on commentary, but I don't hate the guy. I listen to him sometimes, and he has Roy Keane on there. Interesting thing, they had Rio Ferdinand join Man United from Leeds, and they went to Southampton in the run-in for a title, and they drew 1-1. And Rio tells the story of how he walked into the showers, like, angry, like, aggravated, feeling like they'd thrown it all away. And he listened to Gary Neville and Roy Keane, and that's a great point. That's a really great point away today. And he's like, what? And he's like, it's the mentality of the people who know what they're doing. It's like they're looking at it from the point of view of, that's a game away at Southampton. We, you know, teams could lose here. Southampton are decent. That's a good point that we did. We know we weren't at our best today. It's a recognition of where you're at.
Stop gaining the point instead of losing all of them, yeah.
And it's a recognition of you're in a run-in, you're in this kind of fight, and sometimes you go away and you come away with a point, it's like, oh, you've done well there. That's good, you know.
Yeah.
Could have been at home, different thing, but no, that's not. You went to Southampton, you walked away with a point, it was a tough game, midweek, under the lights, fans on your ass from the minute one, you weren't at your best, so coming away with a point, that's a good point, that's a point one, not two lost that. I remember hearing that, and I remember sticking with me, because I kept thinking to myself, when does that mentality kick into a fan base as well? Because Man City fans have it. Like, if you follow Man City on social media, there was no one bitching about that performance. Whereas Tottenham, play Nottingham Forest and win 2-0, people are bitching. We ought to be steamrolling them. We wasted so many chances. Look at the table, we're fifth. It's a nonsense. Yeah. It is an absolute nonsense.
It's the champions mentality, isn't it? You have to learn to get points the ugly way. If you're having a really bad day, you still make sure you come out of that game with something.
It's also just an appreciation that teams don't... There's no God-given right to the points and the win. You have to earn it. And sometimes you've got to like fight and dig in and you'll get them. But it's the same for every club, in the Premier League especially. So I don't look at the run of fixtures we got and automatically see defeats everywhere. I don't automatically see wins either. But I'm taking them one game at a time, and it's Chelsea next. We owe them one. And I hope that this side can play like they did against Arsenal and just add that little bit to the attack. Because if we add that
and we get
those little margins that I just talked about in the North London Derby, those little things go our way, we'll smash them. I got no doubt in my mind.
I'm hoping that Rich is fully fit, because I said earlier in the podcast, I do not see it as a coincidence that when we play with an out-and-out striker, our performance is better from other players.
Well, I'm hoping he is.
Love Sonny. Like, Sonny is one of my favourite people to ever put a Tottenham shirt on.
Yeah.
But as an out-and-out centre-forward, he'll score you goals. As you know, he's our top goal scorer this season. He will score you goals.
Yeah.
But he is best running off someone.
So, I hope so. I mean, he came off the bench against Arsenal, and he took one of the Arsenal players out quite hilariously, actually. And just basically ran straight into him. Wasn't looking at the ball, just smashed him. VAR possibly should have taken a look at that, but it didn't. So, you know, VAR works both ways. Incompetence helps both teams. And Richie just became even more someone I love. So, look, that's where we're going to wrap the show. We will be back next week, where we're going to be talking about both the Chelsea game and a Liverpool game. So that should be fun. I'm going to say it right now. If we lose both, next week's show probably won't talk about them. It's probably going to be a show we'll just pick topics at random. Like, we'll talk about the Israeli conflict or something less controversial than Tottenham. Definitely not doing that. Anyway, until next week, everybody, you all take care. And as always, come on, you Spurs. Let's hope for a turnaround.
Come on, you Spurs.
Let's hope for a turnaround against Chelsea and Liverpool. Is there any... Do you know what? I've got that horrible feeling like we've forgotten something.
No.
I got that horrible feeling. All right, hang on. Let me just double check my notes. Hang on. Live update. Rock Me Amadeus has sent in a message. Rock Me Amadeus via Instagram has sent in, at what point does Ange have to adjust his tactics more than the squad? Why not move Van de Ven to left back and Dragos in the centre back? Because you've got a international captain left back in Ben Davies. And you've got a central defender who can play full back, but probably not. It doesn't make sense. Ben Davies got caught by Saka quite badly early on, and we adapted. It can happen. I've seen some of the best. I saw Udogie get ripped apart by Saka and then grew into the game. So I think that whole second guessing players, moving someone out with their position to somewhere else, it doesn't make sense to me. I think
it's always a dangerous territory. Always a dangerous territory.
And when it comes to Ange adjusting the style of play, this is a thing, Mr. Amadeus, sir, this isn't having a dig at you, but it angers me, this whole kind of, oh no, the result didn't go our way, we should change everything about us. We played this defensive counter-attack shite for 3 years, and it was awful. Even games we won, I was bored out of my friggin' skull. We lost a North London. We lost a North London derby, which should mean that we were shit and all that stuff. And all these people saying that, but we weren't. And we're not a bad team. Even the games we're losing, everything, we're not bad. We've just got to keep. We've got to work. We got to get the players in. We've got to add players for depth. We got to add players to increase the quality in the forward areas. Ange has been saying for months that's where we need to improve, and he's right. It's just like it doesn't take a genius to work that out, but you've got to do it. Like no one, like Jurgen Klopp at Liverpool, his first season, everything there, he started getting them to play this way, and then they got thumped a few times. There wasn't one Liverpool fan calling him for out. For all my opinions on Liverpool fans and Liverpool Football Club and the City. They back their man. When they see that things are going in the right direction, they stay behind him no matter what, and they did. And look at the rewards they got, a Champions League and a Premier League title. In that season, we were one of the clubs that thumped them, Wembley, 4-1. But he knew that the system worked. He just had to change the personnel. And when he changed the personnel, they then ran Man City close, won the Champions League, annoyingly, and we all know why. But, I mean, the year before, they were in the final and lost the final, so... And then they won the league, albeit in the COVID year. And they've pushed hard this year. And they've won a cup this year. And their season this year is going to finish with one trophy, third in the league. Oh, damn. We'd kill for that. And that's a poor season for them now. All they did was Klopp, given time to establish his style, establish the way to play, and then added the correct personnel. We need to do that. If we do that with Ange, we will see results. So this whole... Oh, no!
They said 3 to 4 windows. 3 to 4 windows.
Yeah. But there's... Yeah, I don't buy into this. Jose changed for every opposition. Conte changed for every opposition. We're going to play this defensive crap and we're going to adjust for them all. And it didn't work for us. We tried it. It didn't work. So let's back a guy who's got a plan. This is how we play, mate. And let's crack on with it. And let's stop doing this whole second guessing it the minute a result don't go our way. That's my opinion. Anyway, thank you all for listening. We'll be back next week.
Go on.
Thank you for listening to the Spurs News Podcast. We hope that you enjoyed the show. Stay up to date with all things Tottenham. Follow us on social media. All links are in the podcast description.